This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Lulu Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book is titled Warren. Oh, Warren. And my author, who joins me from the New York City area, is Dr. Ofem Aja. Thank you, sir, for joining me today.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm very pleased to be here.
Pleasure to visit with you. Your background, you were originally born in Nigeria and have migrated to the United States in the medical profession. And this is not your first book, but your second. And you have focused on the life of a former president of the United States, Warren G. Harding. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Why did you become interested in his life story?
Well, I had previously read about Warren Harding's rating among historians as the worst president or one of the worst presidents in the history of the United States.
Wow.
And I remember when I went to a medical conference in San Francisco during one of the tourist guides took us past the Palace Hotel and showed us where Warren Harding died of a heart attack
mm-hmm.
in 1923. And then last year, in December of 2014, I was listening to the radio when they were discussing Harding's love letters to one of his girlfriends, who was his best friend's wife, Carrie Phillips.
Mm-hmm.
I read those letters, the lyrical letters, and I was very, very interested. And I began to put two and two together as to why Harding has received historically such a poor rating among historians. So, I did some more research into Harding's life, and it struck me that, this is an important piece of U.S. history that most people don't know about.
Not too much is known about him.
I thought maybe it would be interesting to write a play about Harding.
I think it's fascinating because there were some concerns or some mysteries surrounding his death. It was reported that he died of a heart attack, but there were some other suspicions. Is that also correct?
Yes, there were a lot of suspicions, and most of the suspicions centered around his wife's behavior. His wife was the only one with him in the hotel room when he died, and his wife refused to grant permission for an autopsy or dead mask. And there were a lot of other behaviors, like her burning certain documents relating to Harding's estate that made people even more suspicious that he probably had a hand in his death. There were also suspicions around the personal physician of Dr. Whose name was Charles Sawyer. And Sawyer was, by all accounts, a quack physician. And the way he died the year after Harding died, in the presence of his wife, in the presence of Harding's wife, also increased the suspicion that she may have had a death in President Harding's. She may have had a hand in President Harding's death.
Is it your background as a medical professional that caused you to become curious about the details of Warren Harding's life and death?
Well, that is part of it also, because I think people jump to the conclusion, many historians have jumped to the conclusion that he died of a heart attack. Dr. Sawyer, at the time of his death, diagnosed food poisoning from eating Alaskan crabs.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the jury is still out. No autopsy was performed, and perhaps too late for us to know the exact cause of Harding's death.
You did some deep research, and I understand, if I am reviewing your book correctly, that Warren Harding's body was exhumed later in time and checked for poison residue, and there was none found. Is that also correct?
I am not sure of that. Truly, I did. I know the body of Zachary Taylor, who is another president, was exhumed, and no poison was found because there were also suspicions about that. But I didn't come across any time in history when Harding's body was exhumed and re-examined.
Well, it's possible that I've confused the facts. That happens a lot. I've interviewed about 1,400 authors, and sometimes the stories get mixed up. But you have also focused on his paramour, or his many attractions to other ladies besides his wife. That also was an integral part of his story, correct?
Yes. Actually, most of the play is about Harding's affair with Nan Britton. Nan Britton was Harding's best friend's daughter. She was about 22 years old when Harding, you know, started having an affair with her. She became, Harding impregnated her, and she bore a daughter, Anne Elizabeth, for Harding. Harding was supporting her and her daughter until he died. And there were a lot of issues surrounding, she was excoriated by Harding's supporters when she had the audacity to claim that Harding was her daughter's father. And she published a book in 1927, The President's Daughter, detailing her affair with Harding.
Interesting.
Harding's family rejected the, Anne Elizabeth, but then in 2015, in August 2015, just about 3 months ago, DNA evidence proved conclusively that Harding was the father of Anne Elizabeth. So, but again, most of the play is about Harding's affair with Nan Britton.
It was Anna Elizabeth. You mentioned that DNA evidence was confirmation that former President Warren Harding was the father. Was Anna Elizabeth still living at that time?
No, the DNA was the DNA testing was done on the children of Anne Elizabeth. Anne Elizabeth died in 2005, so her children and Harding's family did DNA for the testing. So it wasn't done on Anne Elizabeth herself.
Yeah, I've noticed this is only a 66-page book, but there's a lot of research has gone into this. You mention another well-known public figure, Strom Thurmond, in your book. Share a little of that story.
Well, the truth is, I took a lot of liberty with history, facts and fiction in writing the play. This is a play, and I am the first to admit that there's a lot of fact and fiction that is mixed there for the entertainment of the general public.
Wonderful.
The reason I brought in Strom Thurmond is that Strom Thurmond had an affair with a black woman. As a matter of fact, at the time that he was claiming or he was campaigning to keep black people out of the bedrooms of white people, but he was sleeping with a black woman. That was about the same time that Warren Harding was having the affair with Nan Britton. So the assumption here is that Harding was consulting Strom Thurmond for advice, although that part of it is fictional.
It is fictional. All right. The play itself, have you had an opportunity to have it performed anywhere yet?
Not yet. It hasn't been performed yet. It was published in August, at the end of August. I have not had the opportunity to have it performed yet. The publisher is looking into that.
What did you find to be the most engaging story in the subplot of what you discovered about Warren G. Harding?
It wasn't just one. One of the most engaging subplots is how Harding emerged as president, or how he emerged as a candidate of the Republican Party in 1920. They had a broker convention that ended in a stalemate, and Harding was put forward as a candidate who was not threatening to anyone. He looked presidential, very handsome. Women loved him. And the Ohio delegation was very powerful. So he became the compromise candidate who was not even properly vetted. So, and now we have, there is a possibility that something like that may happen again in the future, especially if we have a brokered convention and a compromise candidate is put forward and the delegates don't have enough time to vet the candidate. So that was one of them. The other subplot was the fact that having achieved a lot, despite his flaws, his government achieved a lot during the 28 months he was in office. So there was, and of course, there was, Harding had total disregard for the law while he was president. This was a time of prohibition, and he was serving alcohol, wine, in the White House that was seized,
really?
Confiscated from bootleggers and other, you know, he had total disregard for the law.
This is also an interesting and cautionary tale about the danger of personality elections based on either looks or some other procedure, and that certainly is what's happening in our current culture, that people are attracted to people who are high profile and may have a certain look or certain style. Dr. Ja, what do you think is the most important underlying lesson or maybe historical theme that you would want to convey to the listener or the reader in your play, Warren O'Warren?
I think the most important lesson is that when we choose people who are not properly vetted, when we rely on looks and the high-profile nature of certain individuals, we may be causing trouble for ourselves. And we should look at the substance that people are made of and maybe what they have achieved and their antecedents in order to select the best candidate for high office.
That's good advice. Absolutely. This is interesting that you have chosen to write about Warren G. Harding. The title of the book, again, is Warren, O. Warren. My author, Dr. Offham Ajha from the New York City area. You have written another book. Is it also in a play or a dramatic series format, or what was its style?
This is my first book was a fictional novel, and the title is Dream Comes True, and it was published in 1997. It's available on Amazon. That was about a fictional physician who dreamt of running away with his nurse, and he eventually eloped with her.
Mm-hmm. Very good. The book, Warren O'Warren, how can they get a copy of that? How can my listeners find this book?
It's available on Amazon.com. It's available on Lulu.com. They can go to my website, www.offhamajha.com. It should be available at any of these sites.
Wonderful. Let me spell for my listeners your name. Offham is O-F-E-M, first name, and last name Ajha, A-J-A-H, and you are a medical doctor, so thank you for taking time from your busy schedule to become an author and to do the research that many of us may need to know about. Thank you again for sharing your story about the book you have penned, Warren O'Warren. Thank you for joining me today, sir.
Thank you very much for the opportunity you've given me.
My pleasure. My pleasure. For Indie Book Publishing, Lulu Press, this is J. Douglas Parker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Congratulations on being the proud owner of an adorable, soft, cuddly, sweet-smelling, smiling, cooing, hungry, tired, gassy, screaming little bundle of joy. So now what? Where's the owner's manual for this thing? Where are my instructions? Right here. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on toginet.com. Infant care specialist Blythe Lipman has worked with babies for over 20 years
and works extensively with new parents, providing workshops, in-home visits, tips, and daily phone calls to ease those frazzled nerves. With baby and toddler instructions, you can get the advice you need on how to survive and enjoy your baby's first year. For more information on Blythe and how she can help you, go to babyinstructions.com. From 32 ways to stop a baby from crying, to 14 ways to get a baby to eat, and so much more, it's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world.
Greetings from Lulu Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book today is titled Souls Sitting Waiting. This 72-page creative expression book of poetry and lyrical collaborations has been penned by Julia Kelly, who would under normal circumstances join me but is unable to do so today, so she has asked me to share her thoughts as best I can and read from her book. Reviewers whose notes are on the back of the book have this observation. This is from Kim, acrylic author, The Myth Behind All Truths. I caught myself oohing and awing, even gasping at certain phrases and lines she used. I felt like she should be beyond famous. It made the world seem cruel in a way that it isn't well known. The brilliant unknown poet. Another, Joseph Andrew Newsom, critic writer for Voix des Arts, shares this. There are destinations within the innermost essence of humanity that only poetry can reach. Places that defy description, direction, and distance. They're landscapes, skies, valleys, and voids that exist solely in words and that only eyes of meters and rhymes can perceive. These are the worlds of Julia Kelly's Soul Sits Waiting. Beyond the complacent stupidity of everyday things are the souls of these verses. Beyond the crushing quest to meet expectations is the purity of poetry, as only a few people ever experience it. He further describes the work this way. These verses are a journey through the thoughts of which we are afraid and into corners of ourselves we deny. And Professor J. Maurice Thomas, an intriguing collection of challenging, surreal poetry reminiscent of Lorca, where images of Southern Gothic, cycles of nature, loss, broken relationships, and death are combined in personal juxtapositions that rise like layers of October fog draped upon dying vineyards. Before the reader is guided back into solar light, but left with the feeling of, I don't trust me, but I trust you. Julia, in her own words, has described it this way. This book was written about many characters, both named and nameless, all portrayed, have once endured very painful loss. Whether through war or relationship loss or exile, it deals with emotional loss, physical loss, and metaphorical loss. It is raw and painful, but the message is this. Humanity cannot escape pain. It can only go through it with a higher purpose, with lessons learned. The healing of pain does not come through turning a blind eye to it, but through learning to love more deeply and by persevering through it. Yes, she describes, it is morbid, dark, and bleak, but I am shining a light on the suffering, exposing the wound so that light, natural healing cycles, and the hope of eternality, that which evolves, his or her self-chosen journey. I'll share one of her works, titled Snow Sea. Snow Sea and the Greenest Weed, twisting my ankles to the bottom, inside out to inside me. Don't worry. My mermaid soul, I am still far from this black bed death. The bottom-dwelling, fish-failing ego. My love, you would leave this place, my deep daughter, water, to run upon the shore. And all these waves are still crashing, but don't follow me this deep, because you don't have the heart to. And don't dive into this dying sea when your emotions are still too weightless. You will only float aimlessly. You must choose. Find your own way to courage. You and I are dead, with all the promises disembodied. But something in the water, the air, the earth, and me, something in these words may lead you back to me. In some distant, ethereal dream, you were my everything, my heart, my blood, my bone. Wherever this goodbye should lead, far from this detoxing sea. The crescent moon still holds our everything within the pallor soul of something. This love, oh, this love, it is dead in this snow-melted sea. The snow, the you, the me. Finally, her piece that's the title of her book, Soul Sits Waiting. On the screen, in an endless stare, we're black and white in forever air. On our bench, on the screen, our old Hollywood, that one-shot dream. Look up, and see me. I'm not on your screen. This old bench may seem so empty, but still, sometimes it smells like you. Are you ever going to know? Touch my star. You're not alone. With you waiting, my soul sits waiting. You read your paper. Hollywood smolders. Paper dolls in your L.A. scene, they're glued to you like cherry starlets chasing, hating wounds in our Hollywood dream. The fog is lifting. Our body's shifting. Grainy motion ever reeling. You're not dreaming. Can you see me? What I'm feeling. This old bench may seem so empty. Still, sometimes it smells like you. Are you ever going to know? Touch my star. You're not alone. I'm with you, waiting. My soul sits waiting. This old bench may seem so empty. Still, sometimes it smells like you. Are you ever going to know? Touch my star. You're not alone. I'm with you, waiting. My soul still sits waiting. The preceding has been excerpts from the book Soul Sits Waiting, Poetry and Lyrical Collaborations, the author Julia Kelly. Julia has been writing since age 5. She's also described as an experienced author, journalist, screenplay writer, editor, and most recently enjoying lyrical collaboration in the music industry. To get a copy of her book, just do a search online under her name, Julia, J-U-L-E-A, last name Kali, C-A-L-L-I, and you'll be able to locate this book and possibly other collaborations in the music industry as well. The book is also available by request at your local bookseller through Lulu Press, also Barnes & Noble, Amazon Online, and other fine retailers. For Lulu Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Do you ever wonder if you're the only woman who runs errands in her yoga pants so it will look like she went to the gym? Or how about the only mom who feeds her kids raw cookie dough? Or are you the only one who cooks her family cold cereal for dinner? Do you need more laughter and less loudness? More self-love and less self-loathing? More joy and less judgment? You're not alone. Come to the living room. A place where we get comfy, candid, and confident together. Come seeking sanctuary and leave feeling renewed. We're saving a seat for you. Give yourself some living room today.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world.
Hello and welcome to Tokenet Radio's Author Voices on Air. My name is Deb Han, and it's a pleasure to be with you today. Tell me, do you have a memory, or maybe even you've caught yourself in conversation with some of your friends or colleagues and sort of reflected upon the things we were or weren't taught in high school? Yes, we learned about trigonometry, and yes, we learned about science and history and some really cool things. But did we learn about communication? Did we learn how to be the best we could be when we were in school, be that primary school or high school? Yeah, I think you'll find no, we didn't. Well, all that has the possibility to change, because today we're talking to a wonderful man by the name of Russell Aitken. How are you, Russell?
I'm good, thanks, Deb. How are you?
Excellent, thank you. You've written a fantastic book called The Power of Me, and it's a great manual handbook that's really directed at, 8 to 12, maybe 15-year-old kids. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Yep.
Yeah. Tell us, what inspired you to write this manual, The Power of Me, this book, The Power of Me, for our kids, basically?
Well, like you said in your intro, you know, what sort of stuff did you learn at school, and did it really help you as an adult and to make decisions about, you know, really important decisions in your life, really important things, goals that you wanted to achieve. And, so as an adult, I learnt so much more. Well, I think my education sort of really started when I left school. And I learned so much about life and how to, talk with people and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And I just think, wow, the stuff that I learned, especially in personal development, I would have loved to have known this as a kid. And in school, I would have loved to have learned it in school. I mean, I think it's as important or even more important than, you know, your maths and your English. I mean, sure, you need to learn how to read and write, but, this stuff is so important. And, so that's the inspiration for the book.
It's true. And even to the point you make, the point around goal setting. So, you know, as kids, the closest really in school conversation when we talk about setting goals for kids in school is about what do you want to be when you grow up, when you leave school, and so we get those different professions, like, you know, being a doctor, mm-hmm. a lawyer, a fireman, policeman, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
You take it one step further than that.
Yeah, look, we're all individuals. I mean, there's nearly 7 billion people on the planet, and everyone is different.
True.
So even though 2 people might want to be doctors and 2 people might want to, the pathway, the journey that those 2 individuals take is just going to be so different.
Yeah, it's a good way to look at it. And I know, you know, one of the points that comes out in your book is that who's the kind of person you want to be when you grow up, not just, you know, what's the uniform you want to wear. So it really gives them that opportunity to make choices around their values and their character traits and what's going to be important to them. Yeah, I think that's a really beautiful part of your book. The other thing I really enjoyed about the way you've written this is that you're not talking at the kids, like you're not telling them to do this and do that and, you know, crossing this T and dotting that I. It's not an instruction to them. Like you're really engaging them and getting alongside them. What was your inspiration to do that? And, you know, have you seen it somewhere else? I thought that was incredibly wise, your process.
Look, I've studied a lot of personal development and, you know, the big names, Anthony Robbins, Bob Proctor, and, yeah, Bob Proctor is I'm a huge fan of Bob Proctor, and, you know, a lot of his stuff, you know, I borrowed from in the book. And look, he's 81 years old and he's still going strong and he's still inspiring people. He's still on fire. And, you know, if I can be like that at 81, I would be very grateful and very happy. And to know that I've helped a lot of people along the way feel that same way would just be an enormous thing for my life.
Yeah. It's true, and if you could inspire that in this generation, that, you know, the kids of this generation to grow in that way as well, wow, what an impact that'd have on the world. So, tell me, are you introducing this into schools? Are you talking to teachers, or, you know, how is this message getting out to the kids of this generation?
Look, when we wrote the book. Yeah, there was also another 2 ladies that I know helped me write the book. Mm-hmm. And, they're wonderful ladies, Fran and Nikki. And, you know, we ran some workshops and did some, got some feedback from a lot of different people. And we got a lot of, you know, great results and it was really enjoyable. But to get it into school, I mean, the curriculum is so full of stuff that the government think you need to know. So look, ideally, I'd love to get it into schools. And, you know, like I said before, I think it's some of the most important stuff you can learn.
Mm.
But I think for now, it needs to be an extra activity that you can do. But, you know, the rewards from that extra activity can be, you know, unlimited.
Yeah. Well, I suppose there's words of encouragement to you. I mean, you know, the Dalai Lama talks very passionately about if every eight-year-old was taught to meditate, we'd have world peace in a generation. And increasingly in primary school now, you know, kids have that relaxation time and they're being encouraged to, you know, to invest in their mental and their mindfulness and so on. So who's to say, you know, this might be something that... you know, the popular education system actually opens up to at some point in time. You never know.
Yeah. Look, I mean, there's quite a few alternative educations that we haven't tried yet, but it could be on the cards.
It's true. Tell me, Russell, what qualifies yourself, Fran, and Nikki to espouse these wonderful words of wisdom in the way that you do for the kids?
Look. The highest qualification I have is the passion to do it. Look, you know, I'm not saying I'm more qualified than anyone else or anyone else is more qualified than me, but it's just basically I've come across, and so has Fran and Nikki, stuff that really made a difference in our lives. And like I said before, that would have made a huge difference when we were younger. So we've done our best to... get it out there and bring it to a younger audience.
Absolutely. And I know that you do a lot of work with young people professionally already, don't you?
Yeah, look, I work with young people that are at risk. So, yeah, a lot of these kids come from broken homes and troubled families and troubled histories. And, yeah, and, you know, I see a lot of trauma in kids. And look, I part of this material is to, you know, give them better skills to cope with the things that happen, but not only just to tell them what to do, but to help them understand more about themselves and empower themselves and improve their self-esteem and confidence, and so they can make their own decisions for them, because they are an individual. Everyone's an individual.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, the key words you said there is to empower themselves. And, you know, genuinely, Russell, that's what your book does. You know, like I said before, this isn't a book that you're not talking at the kids. You're not telling them to, you know, pick up their clothes and clean their room. It's not that kind of book. You know, it's really, it's a wonderful process that actually engages them. I think that's what I was most impressed with when I read through this. So, you know, really getting them to engage their imagination and to think about, you know, what are the possibilities for their world. So, very cool.
Yep.
I was just thinking, actually, that not dissimilar, some of the processes that were in your book, but, you know, are the kinds of things that the Richard Bransons of the world were actually, you know, engaged in as children. And I think it's turned out okay for Richard Branson, don't you? Has it worked out for him pretty well?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
He's doing all right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but, you know, he had a lot of challenges when he was younger.
Very true.
And, yeah, and, you know, without the challenges he's going through, he wouldn't be the person he is today. But, you know, challenges aren't bad. It's how you see yourself and how you move through and grow through the challenges that makes all the difference.
Yeah.
And that's part of what this understanding of the book is, that you get to understand yourself as an individual and how you work and how best you can make decisions for yourself.
Fantastic. But tell us, Russell, where can people get a hold of a copy of The Power of Me?
Yep, you can go to the Balboa Press website and just look up The Power of Me.
Excellent.
And you can get yourself, you can get yourself a physical copy or a digital copy.
Excellent. So it's hard copy and on the Kindle, is that the soft copy?
Yeah, yep.
Great.
For sure.
Do you have the Balboa Press website address? Do you know what that is? Is it the W's.Balboa Press?
I believe it's, balboapress.com.
Perfect. And Balboa, for all of those playing along at home, Balboa is spelled B-A-L-B-O-A. B-A-L-B-O-A.
As in Rocky Balboa.
Ah, there you go. Yes. I hadn't thought about it in that light, so there you go.
Okay.
Perfect. All right. Russell, thank you so much for taking the time to share your wisdom with this generation. And I hope that your intention is realised and will be recognised, you know, in a relatively short space of time. So thank you to you, to Fran, and to Nikki. Yeah, please go on. Say what you're going to say.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure, Deb, and thanks to your time as well.
Not a problem.
I hope everyone enjoys it.
So, for those of you that are listening now, what a great gift. We're coming up to, you know, Christmas is just around the corner and so on. So even, you know, a practical birthday gift or back to school in the new year, an exercise for kids to do in the school holidays, it's a really wonderful resource to sow and invest and nurture your kids over the summer break. So, Russell, once again, thank you so much. I really, I thank you for taking the time to share your wisdom. It's been great to talk with you this afternoon.
No worries. Thanks, Deb.
Pleasure. Okay. Team, my name is Deb Han, and it's been a pleasure to be with you for TogiNet Radio, Author Voices on Air. Until next time, bye for now.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.